This is Sean Weathers, and I would like to thank you on your purchase of the New York Butcher. Hopefully I can give you a little bit more insight with my commentary here. Here we see Erin Brown, aka Misty Monday, the star of the film, someone I wanted to work with for a while now, someone that I was aware of because of her erotic films that she did back in the day on Skinamax. So it was a pleasure to work with her professionally here. And this first scene you're seeing was intended to be shot in a park. A lot of inspiration for this character that I wrote, Linda Blair, was based on the Jodie Foster character in Silence of the Lambs. And I think she has like an early scene where she's doing some running in a park. And that was intended to be a park, but a lot of issues came into play where I couldn't shoot a lot of exterior stuff for Erin, but we'll get into that later. Also like to thank Demon Boy for helping me out and providing music for the soundtrack. He also provided a bunch of songs for the previous film I did, The Fappening, which is available in two formats, the Fappening uncut version and also the shorter version on the Vault of Terror 2 disc. So here we are. This is a scene I shot with an actress, Angelica. Angie, as the Rolling Stones song would go. But she impressed me a lot in the casting process, but I didn't really have a fit for her because I was already kind of committed to all the female roles. So I said, you know what? I think she's pretty good. She seems like good people. I want to work with her. And I decided to write this scene in. And I think overall it helped the film. Because otherwise, the first scene you would have seen me in was post me killing someone. And I had like blood on my hands, and it was kind of implied that someone died at the scene that I killed, but you didn't actually see what happened. And I think the dialogue, the interplay, and the scene itself kind of sets the tone and establishes my character a bunch as well. And I'm glad I decided to write her in and go ahead with it. A lot of fun to shoot, and I think this is one of the more intense scenes in the film. The cinematography in this scene was done by Cybele Silver Phoenix, because I did not have a cinematographer for this film. As you're going to notice, or as you've probably noticed, because this may be the second time you're watching the film, assuming you wouldn't watch the voiceover commentary without actually watching the film first. But there's a lot of two shots with not a lot of cutaways into it, like character perspectives, one shots, things like that. Because without a cinematographer, I really couldn't get a lot of angles, and a lot of the film consisted of me setting the camera up on a tripod, or the scenes that I'm not in, or the scenes that I am in where another actor is holding the camera for me. It's handheld, because a good trick with handheld is you can get a lot of different perspectives with handheld without setting up a bunch of different shots on a tripod. So from handheld, you can go from one character perspective to another very easily. You can come back wide. It's just a really good shortcut for someone like myself. So a lot of this film was just, like I said, me setting up a tripod. I was lucky because this is one of, since Hookers in Revolt, the first film I directed myself in, this is probably since that film the smallest role I've had. Aside from that, I'm usually in almost every scene, so I was helped out by that as well, the fact that I was probably the second or third lead in the film. So that helped me out a lot tremendously. But I thought Cybele did a really good job here, and she had a passion for it. She wanted to do it, and she was pretty meticulous, and I think the shots look pretty good here. Now, this film was originally called Night of the Walking Dead, and it was supposed to be a timed release to come out before I believe it was season 6 of The Walking Dead. I believe we're on the second half of season 6 right now of The Walking Dead. It was supposed to be a timed release, and basically what that means is you have a low budget version of a film that comes out the same time a big budget version comes out, kind of like what would be known back in the day as exploitation films. And you know, and now Asylum, if you guys are familiar with that label, they do a lot of stuff like that as well. So that was what this was intended to be. And it's changed a lot since then, because it was supposed to be a completely exterior zombie film. And one of the main things I wanted to do with the film is work with a professional makeup, not makeup artist, a professional special effects / makeup artist for the first time. And I was able to do that here, as you can see, as you're about to see the nice flesh wound come up soon. I was able to do that with this film, but not to the extent that I had originally intended, where it was just a lot of more zombie effects and a much higher kill count that was supposed to play out. But yeah, this film went through a lot of transformations. It was supposed to have been shot like 4 or 5 months before it was actually shot, but just a mountain of delays just kept happening and happening and happening, and it didn't seem like I was ever going to get this film done. So I'm very glad to be watching at it now and going through the last stage of the process, which is just giving a little commentary on what happened. But yeah, originally supposed to be a mainly exterior zombie film, but the location that I was supposed to shoot it at, someone said, hey, I have this great location in Long Island, and you know, you guys should come out. It's a woodsy. I have a shack there and everything. I was like, all right, cool. Sent pictures. The pictures look great. But when we went out there, it was just basically somebody's backyard. And the shack was like a wine shed that his father had. And there was no room in it at all, because it was just a bunch of barrels of wine and a bunch of bugs flying around. So it didn't really work out too well with that first incarnation. But yeah, during those short credits, that was actually Erin's boyfriend who came by to pick her up on the last night of shooting. And he came through and did a little voiceover. That was actually supposed to be more visual. And even the beginning of this scene, Erin was supposed to enter the building. But again, there was a time crunch and Erin was leaving at night. And as you can see behind her, there's bright sun coming from the window. And it would have been like, you know, outside it's night, she comes in, it's daytime. Some people might miss the light coming from behind her because it's just in it for a few angles, and it's, you know, a lot of people may not notice, they may just think it's a bright room, but I didn't want to like take the chance. But it's pretty hard to tell that it's sunlight because it's so damn bright, it just looks like a bright white wall. So, but yeah, my first on-screen death scene. Spoiler alert, I died in Ace Jackson as a dead man because I play as Ace Jackson, but my death was kind of at the end of the movie off screen, so this is my first on-screen death shot. And in both films, I got shot in the head. So that's a little bit of trivia for you right there. This phone conversation was actually supposed to be in the script, her calling the main bad guy, Dr. Fibes, but in the editing process, I just decided to switch it up and made it seem like she was calling the person who she's going to buy the gun from later on. I did a little wind effect there, like spiral effect there, because the wound didn't look so great on the close-up. It looked kind of fake, and it looked really good here in the wider shot. It looks like nice and bloody, and it looks like really scarred up. But on a close-up, it looked really fake, so I just did a little effect there to cover that up. Just trying to add a little bit to the tone of the film here, getting some exterior shots in, because most of the film was interior, because, again, we wanted to speed things up. When you shoot outside, it kind of slows down the shooting process a lot, and also there was a lot of audio issues as well that I'll get into later that prevented us from shooting a lot of exterior stuff. This scene right here is probably the only true guerrilla scene I shot in the film. And I really consider myself a guerrilla filmmaker because I promote that a lot. And this was fun. Reminded me of Scumbag Hustler. Just running around the streets, finding cool places to shoot, and just shooting there before you getting chased off or draw too much attention. So that was cool. This part that Sarah has, I always seem to have one part in my film that's usually a supporting character, that like seven or eight actors end up having the part before the final person does. And what's kind of weird with this one is that Sarah was the first person to have the part, but then scheduling conflicts happened. She said she might be out of town. And then I replaced her, and then a rotation of other actors had the part. But as delays happened, as different things happened, people kept getting replaced. And this was actually the third time she committed to doing the role. So there were three separate times that she had this part amongst a few other actresses. So usually happens with me, like I said, on every film, almost every film, there's a supporting part that, like, during casting, it's easy to just have the actors just all read for that part, and that I think that adds to why it rotates so much. But that was the first time like one actress had three parts at three different times. That shot of the coffee shop, that was that establishing shot was done because of a line in the script, and it was difficult for me to find a coffee place open late. So if I didn't find that place, I would have had to have gone with a Starbucks. So something I was really conscious of in editing that I wasn't conscious of in writing, but I actually do a lot in my writing, is phone conversation with off-screen characters. And there's actually almost like three straight scenes where like the actresses all have phone conversations with off-screen characters. So yeah, that was kind of. Is this the third one? Oh, the third one's coming up. Yeah, it's not three straight scenes, but three straight times you're seeing characters like have. Well, not straight. Okay, that cutaway shot with Cybele reading the newspaper obviously was a phone conversation, but. The next scene's going to be Cybele. So it's basically we go from Sarah to Aaron to Cybele, all having phone conversations with off-screen characters. I didn't want it to have it so much grouped together. Ah, I'm confusing myself. Okay. In editing, all their scenes were back to back. That's what's confusing me. In the script, they were all back to back. In editing, I hated it, so I mixed it up in the final cut. And now I'm confusing myself as I'm watching the film, so ignore that. But there are a lot of phone conversation with off-screen characters, and it's something I do a lot because it helps to have scenes with just one actor. It's easier to shoot, and then it just gives you a chance to maybe get some exposition out without like someone talking to themselves or having to have another actor in a scene. So I do use it a lot, and I was conscious of it, and so conscious of it, in fact, that I didn't even realize that I'd corrected the problem somewhat. So, here is another montage with some cool Demon Boy music. Aaron was actually not a great athlete. She got really tired. She was like, "Hey, listen, you know," I was like, "Put some like baby oil and some water on yourself so you can look like you're tired." She was like, "Listen, after we do a couple takes, I'm gonna be exhausted." And yeah, she was really burnt out from this workout stuff. I think this particular day, most of what we did was just her workout stuff, I think. And then we had pushed a lot of the dialogue stuff to the next day because she was like, I think I'd mentioned before, she had stayed with me for 4 days, and I think this day. This the first scene where she's on the treadmill, and then the workout stuff you're seeing in this montage was basically, I think, all we did. So yeah, I mean, hopefully it comes off like she's pretty athletic. I mean, it's acting. It's not supposed to be real, so hopefully that comes off well. But yeah, I remember she was really exhausted. And I was worried because I'm like, shit, like, we just did like a few montages. It's not really important to the overall film. And we had pushed a lot of stuff back to the last day because this wore her out. And I was super worried because I think it ended up being like 70% of her scenes were shot on the last day and really the second half of the last day. But we were able to gun through it. And I was really worried that day. I was like, oh my God, did I just like screw things up just to get a few workout scenes in there. So, ended up working out. This scene is fun. This scene is funny because, as you see Sarah smoking a cigarette, the girl that lost the part before Sarah, the reason I dropped her off the project is because she said she wouldn't smoke a cigarette for the scene. I'm like, Jesus, of all the things to not do, it wasn't just that, but it was a few things she did, but that was just like the last straw. And I was like, you know, just being too nitpicky, you're making my job too hard. So I was like, let me just check back with Sarah and see if she's free. And yeah, Sarah was able to come through. So there you go. Another phone little thing right there. She didn't actually, Erin didn't actually talk on the phone. She ignored it. Thank God. Or you guys would have seen another phone conversation. And here's Sybil with another phone conversation. And again, this helps with exposition. It's not like, it's not, nothing's not being accomplished, but it really helps with exposition. And also because I tried to write the part where I could get these Erin and Sybil done as quickly as possible. And if I had them interacting with a bunch of other actors that had to show up and worrying about the actors showing up and knowing their lines, it would have made my job so much harder because they're in so many scenes that I just wanted to keep it as simple as possible. So it really helps. And yeah, I think Sybil does a great job here. I like the way this scene is shot too. Cinematography, again, wasn't great in this film because I had no cinematographer. And I, you know, when you're doing cinematography and you have a lot in your mind, a lot can be missed. So I'm very happy with this particular scene right here. Back to phone conversation. So I got to stop ragging my own movie. But too late, you already bought it. But yeah, again, these phone conversations help so much. Because if I had to actually show them talking to these characters, again, it's more characters to cast, potentially more locations, slowing down the film. And when you have very little funds, you gotta figure out all the shortcuts you can. So this was cool because I didn't actually shoot at the Gansevoort, but I shot at the hotel I work at, which is actually just around the corner from the Gansevoort. So worked out pretty well. Now, the day we shot all of these scenes with Sybil and Erin together, with the exception of the last scene, which is the last scene of the film, with the exception of that, all the scenes with Sybil and Erin together, and even that previous scene we saw with Sybil talking on the phone, that was all shot, again, I think I mentioned the hotel I work at, around the corner from the Gansevoort. And on that particular day, we had set out to shoot a lot of these scenes outside. And half of these scenes together, they were supposed to be outside, and the other half was supposed to be in Skytra's office. And what we were going to do was go out during the day, shoot the outside stuff, and then at night come to the hotel. And the problem was, with this film, there was a lot of new for me. This is the first time shooting in the new house since I moved. First time editing with Final Cut 10 instead of Final Cut 7. First time shooting with a DSLR instead of a camcorder. And also a brand new microphone. Now, there was a lot of delays with the film, I mentioned before. One of the delays, like I mentioned, was a location situation. I had to rewrite the script from an exterior zombie movie to something about a serial killer, and, you know, trying to keep the integrity of the script the same. Instead of a bunch of zombies dying, you got a serial killer killing a bunch of people. And essentially, the script was mostly the same at that point when I just lost the location. But other factors came in to change the script even more that I'll get into later. But yeah, one of the delays was getting the equipment. Because there was a lot of delays with equipment. A lot of the stuff was on back order. So I'd gotten the microphone before the camera. I tested the microphone and the camcorder, and it worked fine. And when the camera came, I was like, let's just shoot. I can't keep delaying this thing any longer. Because, you know, it's like I need to finish this project and move on to something else already. And when the camera came, I didn't realize the microphone I had worked on Phantom Power. I didn't even know what Phantom Power was. I eventually found out, but basically, it drew power from whatever source you plugged it into, and it could draw power from camcorders, but it can't draw power from DSLRs. So, I didn't know that was the case. I didn't know why the audio wasn't working. And on this particular day, I was figuring out as I went, it was like, hey, let's go over to B&H and then I'll get something to be getting some kind of adapter, speak to a specialist. And oh, yeah, they're like, yeah, I know what your problem is. You need such and such, and you need a new plug. And I got the new plug, and of course, the new plug didn't work because it wasn't about the adapter, it was just about the phantom power issue. And again, we didn't know it at the time, so we couldn't shoot a lot of these scenes outside. So we couldn't shoot outside because without the microphone, you had to shoot with the audio from the camera, and it's very ambient sound, so it picks up everything. So whereas a microphone, if you just point it in front of the actor, it kind of drowns out all of the other sounds, and it just gets mostly the audio coming directly from the actor you're pointing the microphone at. But when you're getting it from the camera, that's going to be a distance away from the actor. First of all, the person holding the camera, if they sneeze or cough, whatever noise they make is going to be the loudest thing you hear. And then if there's street noise or people walking by, whatever's closest to the camera is what you're going to hear the loudest, and not necessarily the actor talking. So it's very difficult trying to shoot exterior stuff. And we wanted to shoot a lot of or I wanted to shoot a lot of the exterior stuff in Manhattan, which is very loud no matter what time of day it was. And this was an extremely cold day that started off really warm and then just dipped super cold. So I was not dressed for the weather at all. I don't think any of us were. And we basically just had to stall for hours until we could shoot at the hotel late at night. So we were out for hours on this day in freezing temperature, just like hopping from bar to bar or wherever, just stalling for time. And we ended up going someplace to eat. And what was screwy is like the place we ended up going to eat, the door didn't work and it couldn't close, so it was just as cold inside as it was outside, but we had already bought the food and it was like crap. Then we went to Starbucks and they were closing as soon as we went in, and it was just terrible night. And but it ended well because we got all the scenes done at the hotel, which was the important thing, so that was cool. Now this monologue that Cybele's giving here, this was the only scene that I didn't fully rehearse with Cybele, and that's why I had so many cutaways, because she had to look down at the script more than I expected, and I was pissed at myself because Cybele and I rehearsed a ton, and she really nailed this part. I think she did a great job. But that one, yeah, that one monologue that just wrapped up, that was the only one we didn't fully rehearse. And I'm glad I shot a lot of cutaways. I think the cutaways worked really well. I would have used a lot of them anyway. I just would have probably used them not as long or in different spots as opposed to spots that I needed to use it. I would probably use the cutaways in spots more so that I wanted to use it. But yeah, it's just a minor thing. But yeah, she did a great job. I loved her performance in this thing. And there was actually a huge contrast with Cybele and Aaron in their approach to the film, which I'll get into a little bit more later. But overall, like looking at it, I think they both did a great job, but they just have two completely different approaches to acting, which is pretty interesting because Cybele is more so very meticulous, rehearse heavy, and Aaron is more so, let's just show up and wing it and figure it out on set. But yeah, I think they both played well off of each other. Now, what's interesting with the character I'm playing here is, first of all, it's very similar to the character I played in The Fappening. in that there's some kind of backstory that makes the character go crazy and starts killing people. Which was something I wanted to do coming off of the Fappening because people really liked it once my character made the switch and went psycho and said all the funny lines and had all the kill scenes. So it's something I wanted to do coming into this, but in hindsight, I really wish I played the part that Aaron had, and I would have switched up the script. But I didn't know going into it how the delays would have happened and how things would have played out. But yeah, what's interesting in particular with this scene is I have no idea where a safety is on a gun. I just know certain guns have safeties. I don't know if all guns have safeties. And also, when I give her the heroin, I have no idea theoretically how much heroin that would have been or how much heroin it takes to actually kill someone. So, yeah, I was bullshitting my way through this and hoping that I put my hand around where a safety should be and I put in enough baking soda in that bag to look like about how much it would take to actually kill someone. This was one of the rare days where I had a cinematographer. It was actually the last day of shooting that I finally got somebody to come through and do cinematography for me. And what's ironic was I hated the end shot that he did there to finish the scene, and I hated some of the angles that he did. I mean, he did a fine job, but I wasn't thrilled with the cinematography. And it was ironic that I was dying for a cinematographer for the whole shoot. Then I finally got one, and it's like, eh, it doesn't look any better than what the rest of the film looks like. So, but yeah, I really, in hindsight, I really wish I had took Aaron's part, personally. But I think the end result is, again, she has a very different approach that I like my actress to have. But I don't think anyone watching this film would know that I wasn't, that she didn't really perform the character the way I intended it to on paper and the way I wanted it to be done, because she does a great job. I mean, if I was just watching this movie, I'd say, man, she's like, one of the best reasons to watch it, her performance. But it wasn't really the performance I was aiming for. I was hoping she would be a little bit more tortured than she was, and there would have been more of an arc with the character. But I think the arc is there, but just not to the level that I intended it to be at. Because I was, again, when you cut to my character was supposed to contrast her a little bit more starker than I do. But again, I think that's all me, and a lot of that is all the takes that I didn't use, because Erin didn't want to rehearse. And I think a lot of the takes that you don't see is more so in line with what I didn't want. And eventually, for most of the scenes, I wouldn't say all of them, but for maybe like 70% of the scenes, I think I was able to get a take that I wanted out of her. But again, I just wish she was someone who was more into rehearsing and prepping, because I think that would have, nailed the character a lot better as to like what was actually on paper and what I intended it to be. But yeah, again, overall, she thinks she did a great job. But in hindsight, like I said, I wish I would have played it. The reason I didn't play it is because I had intended for there to be a higher kill count in the film, and I didn't want to have someone play the lead that had to interact with a bunch of other actors. I figured the best part for me to play would be someone who interacted with all the other actors, and then I would have a lead that interacted with maybe one or two people, which is essentially what Aaron's character does, interacts with one or two people. And that's why I mentioned the phone conversation stuff as well before. You don't want you don't want to have an actor have their schedule fit into every other actor's schedule, or it makes the film impossible to get done. So that's the reason I intended that I initially played this character, the split personality, is because there was supposed to be a much higher kill count. But because the kill count ended up being, I hated that death scene because he never dropped and died. Because the kill count ended up being so low, if I knew that when I first started casting and whatever, I would have played Aaron's part. But yeah, I was pissed off. He didn't die in that scene. You could see when I slit his throat, he just stood up straight. He never fell back. But Yeah, I love this scene here. From the standpoint of, I thought both Eren and Saibel nailed their characters, and it played out exactly how I intended to it to play out on paper, and most scenes don't. But yeah, that actor never died in that in the death scene. He just stood there after his throat got slit, and because I was behind him, I couldn't tell. So here is another scene that went through a bunch of alterations, or another sequence of scenes that went through alterations. First of all, when I met Sona, or Sonya, or Sanya, I never get a pronunciation of her name correct. But when I met her, I thought she was fascinating, and I spoke to her. We spoke a lot, and she didn't fit the character. But then I decided, you know what? I really want her in this part, and I rewrote it for her. When she said she could sing, I incorporated the singing aspect. The fact that she could speak another language, I wanted to incorporate that. The Armenian stuff, and there was actually a lot more to her part that was left on the cutting room floor because the guy who plays her husband here, Ben, is actually the cinematographer I got for the last day of shooting, the only day I had a cinematographer. And what's ironic is I get Ben to do cinematography for me, but half the day he is in front of the camera, like 2/3 of the day he's in front of the camera as an actor, because the guy who was supposed to play his part ended up dropping out on the film. And 2 hours before we're supposed to shoot his scenes, he texts me and, tells me, "Hey, I can't do it. I understand if you want to replace me." I'm like, and he knew I was an hour and a half away from the location. And to get a text 2 hours before we shoot his scenes, he essentially gave me a half hour to replace him. But lucky me, he gave me permission that if I wanted to replace him, I could, 2 hours before we shoot a scene, when I'm a half hour, notice to actually do something about it because I'm an hour and a half away from where I'm shooting it. So anyway, I was lucky Ben decided to come through for me, but Ben's not an actor. And part of the issue was the scenes that he's in is a lot of action, and there was a decent amount of dialogue. And as we were going through it, it's like he's not the greatest actor in the world, which is fine because he's not an actor. But he memorized the lines right away, but I wasn't so much worried about the lines as more so the performance and also incorporating the action into it. Because there was so much action, it draws out the shooting so much longer. And the sequence of scenes here was not at my house. It was at my friend's house and Jerry Landy. And I didn't want to, his wife is a doctor, she has to work in the morning. I didn't want to be there till 4 in the morning shooting this stuff, because I got home like 2 or 3 in the morning as it was, and I didn't want to be at his place shooting, till like 4 or 5. So, yeah, it's like as we're going through these scenes, I'm like, there's no way, because we're essentially rehearsing it as we're reading these lines and mapping it out with the action and the dialogue. I had to drop a lot of the dialogue, and I had to alter the scenes drastically. So a lot of the reason I casted Zona ended up on the cutting room floor anyway, because the whole backstory of there being an age difference between them had to be dropped because Ben is younger. And then a lot of the dialogue that incorporated development into their characters and why they were going to be killed had to be left on the editing room floor. So we don't even know why they were killed, but because a lot of that had to be cut out. So these scenes here are a lot shorter than they were intended to be. There's more to their characters and there were more to the scenes. And as you can see, once I pick him, I just cut right into me killing him because, again, there's a big chunk of stuff that was left on the editing room floor. I had a lot of trouble with these sound effects. Hopefully, people like the way this sounds. I originally had it as musical stings, but then two of the people that I got feedback from, one said it sounded comical, they liked it, but it was funny. And then the other person said, it didn't make sense, the sound that was happening to what was going on. I thought it worked. So hopefully the change I made does work. this new sound as opposed to what I did have, because what I did have I thought worked, but it's always tricky with sound effects, because even if you watch big budget movies, the sound effects aren't exactly realistic. I remember when I was watching The Dark Knight, and a lot of the death scenes in that movie ended on musical stings. There was no actual killing sounds. I think that was because they were trying to go for PG-13, maybe that helped them. But you'd be surprised how many films, when you really listen to people dying or when you watch death scenes, it's usually musical stings or sounds that sound nothing like what you're actually watching. They're just cinematic sounds that you accept as being realistic. This headbanging scene took us forever in timing it out as to when I was supposed to fall after she swung. Because obviously we don't want her hitting me and she's coming from behind. So it was a lot of one, two, three, go, one, two, three, go type stuff. Hopefully that take looked realistic enough. I did not walk with any plastic to cover up Jerry's floor, and there was just a huge mess and a huge cleanup. Sorry again, Jerry. This was my first time, as I mentioned before, really doing special effects like this for my films. So, yeah, I was underprepared. I was not prepared well at all for it. And what was hilarious is Dead, who did the effects, after we had done this was the second headshot scene. The first one, Ben didn't frame it right. And you saw the tube at the back of her head. So and that's not something we reshot because we knew. I only looked at the footage when I was editing it and said, "Oh shit, thank God we shot this twice." And then I realized, okay, at least the second take we got it right. But we were lucky to do it twice because Jerry was like, notably, understandably, like kind of pissed, because I didn't even tell him we were using blood or doing this stuff. But after we had done it twice, I'm looking at the footage a little bit, trying to figure out if everything came out well. And then Dead, the guy who was doing the special effects, said, "Hey guys, check this out," and does a third kill shot and like completely messes up all of Jerry's walls. And I was like, "What are you doing? I'm not even rolling the camera." So that was hilarious and stressful at the same time. So, this mirror image kind of threw me off a little bit because I am looking in the mirror. I was like, "Did I do the wound on the right arm?" Because I thought I was shot in the other arm. But the wound is on the arm it's supposed to be on, my left arm. But that was just a mirror image. So when I first saw it in editing, I'm like, "Oh my God, don't tell me I blew it. Don't tell me I blew it." Obviously you can't change it now. This scene feels odd because Aaron does a great job in the scene, but I'm just so used to being like having all the emotional scenes in the film and you don't really see the arc in my character, which you're not supposed to, because I'm supposed to be kind of like the evil guy. But yeah, it's like Aaron does a great job, but like it's like, man, I feel like I'm sitting on the sideline because again, I'm used to being in like in every scene of every movie I do and playing the lead, and this may be the smallest part I've had in a film since I've been acting, so it feels awkward to see like an actor perform really well in my film, and I'm in the scene and I'm in the film, and I'm kind of like, playing second fiddle. I'm playing Robin to a Batman. I want to be Batman, but she does a great job here. This scene here I actually shot a couple days ago. The part where she looks in the mirror, and you can see my hair has grown out thicker, because there was a scene we didn't shoot for time restraints. And also, it was going to be an exterior scene with Erin doing running. And again, the athleticism is not a strong suit of hers. It was freezing cold. I didn't have a cinematographer, and she was going to be doing running, and I was going to be in the scene with her. So it was a lot of reasons we didn't get the scene done. But we cut from her freaking out to us casually talking. And in the first cut, I had one line. But after that one line, she runs out into the streets, and then I have more dialogue. We have another scene. So basically, when I recut it, I just recut my part in the mirror because obviously we're not in the scene together anyway, so it worked out well. And I just added the dialogue that was going to be in the scene that was cut out. So hopefully it makes us sitting down casually make a little bit more sense or go a little bit smoother. But again, here's one of those scenes where it's just a simple two shot, and again, it's interior because the camera's pretty far from us, and if we were outside, you're dealing with a lot of noise, and also you're talking about slowing things down a lot, going to the location, setting up the shot, and going through all that process adds another hour or two to getting the scene done, and as opposed to just something like this where it's just like, all right, let's do a couple takes, and also the fact that Erin didn't really know the script that well. Again, because she's more of a wing it type person, I figured stuff like this would help us, which it did. If she didn't nail anything perfectly, like it would be fine because, even if I wanted to do a bunch of different angles and different things like that, it would take the scene being performed the same way over and over again, as opposed to just when you have one shot with both actors in it, actors can ad lib. Or they can do it differently on each take, and it makes no difference at all because you're not trying to cut takes together. So, and again, this was another simple shot. The cutaways for this were actually added again yesterday because it was just me laying there with my eyes closed and Aaron sitting over me for like a couple minutes. It was like, man, this scene looks visually boring. So I was like, let me just figure out some cutaways that may work into, the character's psychosis and maybe add a little bit more to the scene, at least add some visual to it, get some exterior shots, cut it up a little bit so it's not just this one static shot. But like I said, 70% of Erin's scenes were done, I think, on the second half of the fourth day, which was her last day. So we actually got through these scenes pretty quickly and pretty well, despite my worry of us pushing it back because of the workout stuff we did on day three. And yeah, it was amazing how quickly we got this done. I would say like 80% of the film was finished in the 4 days Erin crashed at my place, and I'd say half of those 4 days was just dealing with audio issues and dealing with the new camera and things like that. It wasn't even getting any work done. So really, it's like the equivalent of 2 full days of shooting that most of this movie got done, which is a pretty good pace. And a lot of those cutaways that you saw me do and that I mentioned that were done yesterday were actually done in the rain. It's a huge rainstorm, and I'm cycling through this storm, and I have a bunch of plastic bags over my equipment. I have all this equipment in my bag. I'm like, what am I doing? I just dragged all this equipment out here, risked it getting wet for no reason. But I was lucky; the rain eventually eased down. But I was determined to get the cutaways. I was like, either I'm going to get the cutaways or I'm not, because I was not going to delay this project any more than it was. It's just been delayed so much. I mentioned before, it was my first time working with Final Cut, first time working with the camera. I talked a lot about the audio issues. Other issues was casting. I mentioned the actor canceling out on me on the first day. There were a bunch of other actors that gave me issues as well. In this particular scene, this was a casualty of the actor that Ben replaced, because the scene was supposed to go on much longer, and there was supposed to be more of an explanation of why each of those characters were killed. Now, the drug addict that Sarah played, we got into that. We didn't get into the scene where the older guy who played the Lon Chaney character, we didn't get into the reason he was killed because I said the guy she had us kill in the park. His scene was supposed to be shot in the park. Instead, we shot it inside because it was raining that day, and I was not going to delay that anymore because I had a cinematographer that day for the first time. My special effects guy was there. He wanted to get paid and wrap up stuff. And I had the actor there. I'm like, I'm not going to delay this anymore. Let me just rewrite it for inside. But I'd already shot Aaron's stuff, and I already shot the scene referencing that I killed him in the park. So I couldn't talk about the reason he died. And then I couldn't talk about the couple because I had to edit their scenes. So a lot of the stuff we talked about didn't make sense. So, and there you just saw a sex scene that I did with Aaron. What was funny was when I initially wrote this script, I was around 200 pounds. By the time I shot the scene, I was 135. So at least the delays helped me look a lot leaner for the film. Yeah, between the wrapping of the fappening, which I think it was around 140 pounds, I put on like 60 pounds in like, I guess maybe, 4 or 5 months, and then lost it all pretty quickly again for this next film. I really don't want to go on another diet. I hope I don't gain a lot of weight again because I'm known for gaining and losing weight very quickly. This was actually this was the night Aaron was going home. And I was like, screw it, let's just get some, on your way home, let's just get some footage. So she actually dropped me off in Manhattan. And on her way through Manhattan to go home to Jersey, just got a little bit of footage of her in the car. Got the old police light that a friend of mine had from an old movie he did, just to establish her cop character a little bit more. And got a little bit of footage of her outside. Aside from that, everything was interior. Just to make sure the process went as quickly as possible. Now, here was a tricky scene for me. As I mentioned, these scenes with Cybele and Aaron together were all shot late at night after we were in the cold for endless hours, stalling for time until we could shoot at the hotel. And something that I'm usually very conscious of is actors talking at different volumes in scenes, and especially when I have a situation where I'm using audio from the camera instead of the mic, boom mic. And I was able to, again, there was not a lot of prepping done with Erin, and she did a lot of yelling with the character. I was able to like adjust her performance as we went. Like I said, basically the early takes we did was virtually rehearsals, and then the late takes was like, all right, let's just get some usable takes towards the end. She yelled a lot in this scene, and Cybele whispered a lot, and I was able to work on Aaron's yelling, and I got her to do a couple of late takes where she wasn't as loud. But I didn't remember to tell Cybele to speak up, and when you have one actor talking loud and one actor whispering, the audio doesn't come out as well as you'd like. And I was pissed at myself because their volume didn't really click too well. One was too high and one was too low. So much audio issues with this film, but I think overall, considering all the issues I had to go through, the audio was decent enough. This was actually the first scene I'd shot with Aaron. This was shot on day one. The first girl I killed was the first stuff we shot, and then we shot this. And this wrapped up day one. Day one were the two best scenes, I think, or the two best sequences. Because I definitely think the scene where I killed off Angelica and this scene are two of the better scenes in the film. And these are both scenes we shot in day one. So I am so thrilled this scene came out well, because this was when I realized how much trouble I was in. Because I realized that I had no idea how underprepared Erin was until we shot this scene, because she was playing it so far from what I intended the character to be. And again, it's not a knock because she is such an accomplished actor that she does what most accomplished actors do, and actors with a lot of experience, is they generally show up and play themselves. If you look at, big Hollywood stars, Tom Cruise essentially plays the same character in all of his movies. Will Smith, right on down the line, they generally show up and they play the same character. And when you have a ton of experience, you have a ton of confidence that you don't need to do a ton of prepping. You just show up, play yourself, and knock it out. But I had a very specific character I wanted her to play. And it took a lot of coaxing to get the right performance out of her. And this scene, like I said, this scene had me super worried because we did a lot of takes. And I would say the takes that I used are the only takes I liked. And again, that's not a knock. It was just, it's like we had to accomplish what we would have done in rehearsals while we're shooting. So it just took a while to get to the performance I wanted to. But yeah, this scene came out great. And like I said, I mean, if I wasn't the filmmaker, if I didn't write the script, I would think her performance is as good as anyone's in this film, if not the best performance. So, worked out well in the end. But it was a lot more interesting developing Sybil's character because during the rehearsals we were able to mold it better, and it helped me a lot, I think, as a writer. Being able to go through your work a bunch of times, even though it should be helping me as a director to rehearse. But ironically enough, it helped me more as a writer because it's like, as you're rehearsing the lines over and over again, it's like, you kind of say, hey, maybe I should have said this here, or maybe if I tweak that, this character would be more distinctive, or maybe this is not something this character would say. So it actually helped me more as a writer, going through all of that. Very stressful day one, but great way to end it. And again, first time working with special effects. I like the way the special effects came out in this film. This was supposed to be another exterior scene. A lot of exterior scenes. And the other issue with these exterior scenes that were switched to interior is all the rewriting that has to be done on the fly, which is, it compromises. It's not just trying to figure out a way to make the scene come off just as well, but it's trying to make sure that everything makes sense in the context of the script. And like I said, I mean, there was this previous scene that I mentioned that a bunch of dialogue was cut out that really explained things more. And again, that was because of an actor dropping out and because of rewriting something to shoot it inside. And again, with a lot of these scenes, it's not just rewriting it to make the scene itself work, but how does the ripple effect work on the rest of the film? So that's a bunch of things there that play into it. A little subtle thing here, I have the nuts next to my character because I'm nuts and she's crackers. Not a racial term, but crackers meaning crazy as well. And nuts and crackers. So I just figured there's a little thing there if anyone notices it. Not a advertisement for Planters. That's not why I put that there. But yeah, this was supposed to be exterior, and you're gonna see a quick shot of me after this, and it's by Dumbo, and there's a little park there, and with a bench, and it was gonna be shot from behind us, like behind me right here is a bench, and I would have shot it from behind us, and we'd sit sideways so you could see the Manhattan skyline and us sitting there talking about, going out and killing people, and then you're seeing Manhattan in the background, and bam, cut to the New York Butcher. I think it works out just as well because you still see me looking at the Manhattan skyline. So it worked out in the end, I would say. Hopefully, my voiceover added something here. I always tend to look at my film and think, man, what could have been better? So if things sound a little negative, that's just me just like thinking about the next project, and it's like, what am I going to do differently? So that's kind of my mentality. It's like, well, I could have done this better, could have done that better. So that's kind of my perspective when I do voiceover, and especially when I do it by myself. This is the first voiceover I've done by myself. It might be. I've done voiceovers for most of my films, but sometimes the voiceover doesn't always make it to the film because of space on the DVD and different things like that. But this might be my first solo voiceover. I know I did solo voiceover for Maniac 2, which is part of Vault of Terror, and I given so much background on that film, and I was so pissed when I didn't have room on the DVD for it that I'm like, no more voiceovers for me, especially no more solo voiceovers, because I feel like when I do voiceovers with other people or with someone else, like it's less work. When I'm by myself, it's like I gotta take notes, looking at my notes and trying to keep track of what's on screen. It's like, did I miss something I want to talk about and crap like that? And am I babbling too much? And because you're not really interacting with someone else. But hopefully, this added to the understanding of the film and the enjoyment of the film. And hopefully, I added some insight to it here. And obviously, these are a bunch of fake. The first few names you saw here were people who actually helped me out with the film. But most of these crew credits are obviously just names of famous directors in the horror genre that just put in there just to pad out the film a little bit. It's still not even an hour. Because, again, the kill count was supposed to be so much higher. That was really supposed to lengthen out the film, but once the kill count was dropped, the length of the film dropped significantly as well. So, but yeah, thank you so much for your purchase. I really appreciate it. If you enjoy this, check out my other films. And you can follow me on all formats of social media at Sean Weathers, SEANWEATHERS. Follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. If you like the film, comment whether you're watching it on, online, on demand, leave something in the comments. If you bought it on DVD, write a review. Only if you liked it. If you didn't like it, keep your opinion to yourself. That's where I stand on that. So thank you guys so much. I will somehow try to keep talking until there are no more credits on the scene, but I just feel like I'm babbling right now. So I will end this voiceover right here, even if I have another second or two. Thank you, and until next time, peace out, bitches.